Tom Hofrichter, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, 'tis the season of your 50th anniversary, so you've really put forth an extra specially clever way to lighten winter's sadness in the meantime, it seems. And this includes the Three Toms Atoming that you're bringing us in the way of a new Christmas review. Would you tell us how that all came about?
It started as Tom and Tom's Christmas Songs and Stories. Tom Didier, I've been working to get to do a show with me ever since I got back here 22 years ago. We did a show almost 40 years ago at Civic of Mice and Men, and we haven't done a show since. But finally, I was able to pin him down with doing what he loves to do, which is sing. So I thought, Tom and Tom's Christmas Songs and Story. Tom Didier sings, I'll tell stories. I sing a little, he tells stories a little, but for the most part, he sings and I tell the stories. And then, by chance, I found a pianist named Tommy Saul, who's an amazing musician. So now, it's not just Tom and Tom's Christmas Songs and Stories, it is also with Tommy Saul.
What a clever little review that it sounds like.
You've heard of the three tenors at Christmas, these are the three Tommies at Christmas.
Well, the theater goers are certainly in for a refreshing little treat, it sounds like. And what new twists on an old tradition of a review is this little bundle of holiday cheer bringing on?
It truly is broken into two parts. The first act will be secular with songs that we love and stories that we love from the secular world. And the second act will be the telling of the story, the reason why we come together and celebrate Christmas. So it will be the Christ story with the music that we're used to hearing at Christmas and the stories from the New Testament and the Old Testament with some poems from some artists who have captured the season particularly well. But first act secular, second act spiritual.
What a treat it sounds like. And what does this sweet little format enable you to do that others that you have used successfully just don't?
The format has been really good to minimalize, to just be able to pack a tight little 95-minute review with stuff for myself and Tom Didier. I wanted to make sure that it was stuff that highlighted our strengths and also negated the need to have a larger cast.
That's great. And then, of course, by wrapping it all in the big bow that is Tommy Saul's wonderful music, you do have it covered.
I think people will be really entertained, and I think the second act, they'll be really moved as well.
That's great. Well, who could ask for more? And I'm not going to ask your favorite shining star in this display that you're putting together, but what among its offerings has particularly grabbed your own heartstrings?
Oh, the first act, The Letters from the Soldiers, is always lovely, and me dancing around as Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer should be quite a sight. But the second act, starting with the Old Testament and moving through to the Christmas story, is moving for us every time we do it.
That sounds like it's going to be a wonderful bit of special Christmas cheer. Congratulations on that.
And thank you.
Meanwhile, Tom, being your 50th anniversary, you're also gifting us with a clever production on the other end of those oh-so-merry days of holiday cheer, and that's a play called The Christians. So what pleasures await us in the soon-to-be-here new year in that?
The Christians is a play that touches my heart because it's a play that talks about what's most problematic in society right now is when people disagree, and they disagree to the point where they are unable to even almost look at each other. There's a great quote that comes from the play that says, "I have a powerful urge to communicate with you, but I find the distance between us insurmountable." So The Christians is about a man, he was a young man 25 years ago, started a small storefront church with 50 people. It's turned into a 30,000-person megachurch. He comes back with a revelation that perhaps God doesn't send people to hell. Perhaps we're all going to be forgiven. And so his church has trouble with that message, and it's the disintegration of his church from underneath him because his beliefs have changed. For me, what's most important is how do you look at somebody who you just fundamentally disagree with and don't demonize them? How do you find a way to love somebody who just is on the polar opposite of what you think is so important? These are the plays that I think are fascinating in the theater today. We're doing a play later in the season called Ben Butler, which does the same thing. There's another new play, it's called The Originalist, about Antonin Scalia and his clerk, and it's based on a true story. Scalia always kept a very liberal clerk to argue with him. But I look at Scalia's relationship with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. They were best of friends, and yet how different they saw the world and they saw the law. How do you talk to people who see the world and see things, politics and religion, so fundamentally different from you, and you have a powerful urge to communicate with them, but it seems so often that that distance is insurmountable?
Big point. And the whole material issue with megachurches, that does make the headlines regularly in one way or another, and the other disagreements that you're speaking of. These current issues that this story addresses, how much of a change or attention do you think it can bring to it and maybe get something done about it?
I don't think that the Christians is looking for big societal changes. I think it's asking, how do we look at other human beings who we have loved or still love and communicate with them when things have changed? The head minister and his wife end up probably splitting up at the end of the play because she no longer can see her as someone who is a wife to a man who doesn't believe in what she fundamentally believes in. And she has one point where she talks about, and honestly, if I stayed with you, it makes me afraid that I'll start believing like you. And the me now doesn't want to become that me in the future. So is change even possible? Are we completely unable to look at the possibility that perhaps our minds and our lives and what we think is right and wrong can change over time? And I think that's one of the most important things that's going on in this country, but in the world today. I know it is in my relationships. There are a lot of people that I dearly love, but there are subjects we can't talk about because they will alienate us from one another so horribly that the distance will be insurmountable.
Those are heavy points, and being brought up is one huge starting point, and it sounds like this drama is certainly all about that. Its young and clever author, Lucas Naith, has already won multiple awards for his works, including this one, and this only came out in 2015. What is he bringing to the thoughtful theater movement, do you think?
Partially this idea of how do you bridge the unbridgeable. Interesting, his most recent play, which is playing at Indiana Repertory next spring, is called Another's Doll's House, which is Ibsen's Doll's House, but 30 years later when Nora comes back as a woman who has left her young children and left her husband. And again, this idea of people who so fundamentally disagree with the way they believe the world works, the way they believe faith works, the way they believe whatever you want to name, race, gender.
Those topics that are tough to discuss but need discussing, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that he is on the scene because it sounds like a new voice is going to be well appreciated in your mission to share these kind of things with the community. Now, a word about social media in this day and age. It's delightful, and certainly you use it to your advantage. Why should folks visit your own First Presbyterian Theater Facebook page if they want to keep aware of lots of things, including your anniversary?
Well, we're pushing for more of social media, but what we're doing is every week we are putting old shows, the pictures, the photos of them online. So you can see Harvey Cox at age 50 doing a show from, you know, the 70s. You can actually see a young me. You can see me with hair. every week we're uploading somewhere between 2 and 5 shows from our archives, and we're trying to completely digitalize our archives. We're trying to share those out on the social media sphere so people can take a look at the shows we've done over the past 50 years.
That's a wonderful gift, actually, to give the whole community, certainly the First Presbyterian Theater, and also drama lovers and playgoers from this area. That is very delightful. Good luck on all of that. And meanwhile, Tom, First Presbyterian Theater is always there to bring us something thoughtful, and you've been spearheading that mission for nearly half of your 50 years that the theater is celebrating this year. In all that time, what has been your driving force, and what thoughts would you like to leave with our listeners for this holiday season and beyond?
Some plays stick with you longer than others. I think any artist would be lying if they didn't say that some projects just magically line up better than others, and one never knows why, and one never knows going in which one it's going to be. But for me, in some ways, it's been very selfish because I use the arts to try to figure out how to live my life. I try to use it to teach me how I should talk to my fellow man, and also, I would argue, the arts find a way for us to touch what is ephemeral, to touch what is universal, to touch what I would call God. The great Thornton Wilder line from Our Town, where he says, everybody deep down in their bones knows there's something eternal. And we believe that something eternal has to do with human beings. And there's no proof of that. You can't remove somebody's soul and show it to them. But boy, every once in a while, a really great piece of art, it's only for a flash, only for a moment, but it reveals that which we normally don't see in our everyday life. So that's why I do it. That's why I continue to do it. And that's why I still am enjoying doing it some 22 years after I've come back to Fort Wayne to take over First Pres.
Tom Hoffrichter is the managing artistic director of First Presbyterian Theater. Thank you so much for keeping the theater alive and well from that platform all these years, Tom, and blessings to you and yours.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to come out here.